Footy Spirit has pinched the Oaks by four lengths.
But a champion becomes a legend. Makati Deaver has won it.
We are back. The spring is in full swing. Hello and welcome. This is .com and The Den Mondays. I'm Roger Aldridge. Richard Irvin from Wolf Den is alongside me in a virtual sense. Rich, it was a tough day for favourite backers at Caulfield, but that also brought a lot more intrigue to an already fascinating spring.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing Tom Hackett. How much better life is it at Land Ladbrokes after the results? But yeah, great day of racing. A lot of controversy and we are going to look into it all in the show.
Yeah, no one's ever said they're looking forward to hearing Tom Hackett before, but Rich, it's the first time for everything. Okay, it's time to tell you the six things that really mattered at the weekend.
The Straight Six.
Our big six, Rich. Let's kick it off with the biggest boil over in many eyes, and that was broadsiding getting rolled by a horse, which Chris Waller wanted James McDonald to ride, only for him opt to go with the Godolphin Colt. And that's Private Life, a horse you had actually said right here on .com and the Den Mondays was a blowout chance in a previous episode.
I did tip it in a show a few back, said $21 was a good price to grab. Tried to brag about it with the boys in the Den on Saturday and they wouldn't let me have my day, but that's okay. We can move on from that. So we can see the vision up on the screen here. And this is about the point where J-Mac lost the race. Private Life had a pretty easy time in front and went on with it. So it was in a benchmark 64, I think, at the start of September. Pretty hot race. Lilac was in that race as well. He won that, then he came down to Melbourne and ran pretty well, and then he lobbed in the Caulfield Guineas and won. So it's been a really steep ascent for him. Chris Waller, he's won 6 Group 1s this season. I think there's only been 15 Group 1s, so he's doing incredibly well. But, I really enjoyed seeing Private Life win. I guess the big talking point was broadsiding in the track and J-Mac basically blaming the track. My take was that it was more a mediocre ride from J-Mac than the track. I think that he had some opportunities, probably about the 800 and up until the 600 to sort of advance on broadsiding. He chose not to do that. And then when he was trying to get in a position to light broadsiding up at the top of the straight, Private Life and the other horses up ahead were off and gone. And that was the fatal mistake. Yeah. What did you make of it, Rog?
Well, I mean, it's certainly on the day. I was like, oh, this clearly leaders on. But that just happens at Caulfield when you get a firm track. It generally is a leader's track. And Caulfield is a difficult track for any horse going first time, especially a Sydney horse. So, you know, there's a few mitigating factors, but people obviously shouldn't be jumping off broadsiding. I don't think so anyway. That the track would have played a part, and many champs have bounced off a Guineas performance like that to win a Ladbrokes Cox Plate.
Yeah, yep. Definitely got to go on the Cox Plate, and that's what James Cummings is saying in the media. A few people who know their racing history well, the Bird, who's one of the members of the Den, he was saying that both Octagonal and So You Think ran okay race in the Caulfield Guineas and then went on to win the Cox Plate. So you've got to head on to the Cox Plate for sure. Evaporate was a great run, maybe even better run than broadsiding. Tossing up, the Hayes-Boys are tossing up whether or not he goes to the Cox Plate. I think we've got a tweet here to look at, Rog.
Yeah, so would you run broadsiding in the Cox Plate? Well, yes, 73%. No great surprise there. I can't see an argument for not running him in a Cox Plate. The three-year-old's featherweight. He's probably going to be better at 2,000 metres. You'd think he might handle the Valley better than he handles Caulfield. And there's no argument in my eyes to say he shouldn't be in that Cox Plate.
He had a really tough run on Saturday. It'd be a great sort of final hit out for him before the Cox Plate. I'd be running him for sure. I can understand that, you know, the 27% of people that said no, they probably just think that he's not good enough. It's pretty easy to say. The Cox Plate's a very, very hard race to win. Finishing off that race, Angel Capital and Mayfair were both pretty ordinary in the race. And I believe Angel Capital is going to go off for a spell. Just they said that it had come to the end of its preparation.
You get a soft six, soft seven on Cox Plate day. And yeah, I think they'll still come for broadsiding. They'll also, if he's there, who would enjoy a bit of sting out the ground on Cox Plate day is Mr. Brightside. As mentioned, the perceived track bias was set up for bold front-running wins. Deny knowledge set Mr. Brightside a task. Not a Pride of Jenny-like task on a day like this. She was always going to be tough to catch, and he couldn't quite get there.
Yeah, Mark Zara is one of the best jockeys in the land. It was just an absolute peach of a ride by him. It was a cut and pace from what Declan does on Pride of Jenny, another Pride of Dubai mare. Rode her perfectly. You can see here the stewards' footage, Mark just getting the most out of her and Craig doing everything he can to try and overcome the gap, but it was all in vain. Interesting horse, to my knowledge. Picked up for $500,000 by Yulong. Normally they pay about 10 times as much as that to get these horses to go and win a Group 1, so they've had a bit of a lucky throw at the stumps there with this one. She is a red-hot chance in the Caulfield Cup, 50.5 kilos. Did see about $21. I've got a feeling I might have even firmed me to 17, which doesn't make me that happy. There it is there. There's the market. I think they bet as much as 200-1 earlier in the week before it had its win on Saturday. But she'll be in the race. It's going to be a lot of pace on in that Caulfield Cup. But I think she's a good chance.
Yeah, at that weight, certainly. And Sam Friedman, immediately after the race, was like, you know, front running the Caulfield Cup, you know, why not? Hey, there's obviously plenty of people questioning whether Mr. Brightside should sort of shelve thoughts of running 2,000 metres or 2,040 and just stick to that mile trip. But I wouldn't be giving up on it just yet. Like I said, soft conditions, Moonee Valley specialist, or not specialist, but he's very good at the Valley. I think that's where Brightside goes next, surely.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. I mean, I think there's more people who think that Mr. Brightside shouldn't go on the Cox Plate than think that Broadsiding shouldn't. But, yeah, there's a bit of a query aim at 2,000 metres. But everything that's happening now is what happened last year. He profiles the same. He's run very consistently before the Cox Plate last year. He's run very consistently before the Cox Plate this year. He's going to be about $10 or $11, which is a decent price. Many thought that he did win the Cox Plate last year when he got beat by Romantic Warrior, arguably one of the best horses in the world. And the Hayes boys, they're as happy as Larry. They're just going to go on the Cox Plate. There's not much pressure on them as well with Mr. Brightside this year. There wasn't much pressure on them last year. And it'll be very interesting to see how he goes. And he's always so consistent. Like running second or third in the Cox Plate's still a fantastic result, great prize money. So you push on and, you know, yeah, I'd rather be backing him at $10 or $11 than laying him.
Yeah, and he can still go to the Champions Mile or Flemington on final day.
Exactly.
After a Cox Plate run. That's what he did last year. Hey, any others behind those top two worth following, you reckon?
Yeah, well, Letitia was very good. I heard Chris Wall on the radio this morning saying that he was very happy with her and she'll just cut and paste again from what she did last year. She'll go into the Empire Rose on Derby Day and then back up into the Champions Mile on the last day of the carnival, and she's probably going to be a great hope in both of those.
Haven't they been throwing flowers at the feet of Blake Shin after his ride in the Toorak? We had to wait until race 10, but my goodness, it was a stunner. The Queensland Galloper... one of only a few to defy that track pattern and come from the back to win. He had to go early.
He did. It was the talking point of the weekend. Everyone took their hat off to Blake. It was fantastic. They just tried to get too cheeky in front, Mickey D and that. He wanted to steal the Toorak on another wheel. And I think Blake saw that happening about the 800. He took off and then he knew that once he went, he had to really go for it. And even more so, like Mickey D at about the 500, tried to slow him up even more, and that's when Blake Shin really lit Antino up and Antino circled the field and went past them so fast that it was all over. And everyone knew it. As soon as you saw Antino go past, everyone just said, well, they're not going to catch him. And the way that he went on was incredible, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Dano made of him from a ratings point of view. But there was a lot of talk about when this happened a long time ago, I think it was, 27 years ago something, with Octagonal. Why don't we put this one up? Rod, you would remember this one. So it's basically a carbon copy. This is the Chipping Norton in 1997 Octagonal. Juggler was favourite about $1.90 or something like that. And you can see here that basically Raymond Shane Dye and Blake Shin take off exactly the same time. Octagonal got to the front a little bit quicker because it was a much smaller field. But here on the bottom of the screen, you can see Blake Shin really getting into Antino and just puts, four or five lengths on them so quickly. And I guess the most impressive part, Roger, is this end bit here where he really goes on with it. And it was an elite Group 1 performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you sort of threw it out to me yesterday when you sent me this clip, say, I wonder if he'd had a look at the Chipping Norton in the lead-up. Well, he was on radio on RSN this morning. He said, no, it was a spur-of-the-moment thing. He just decided at the 800, let's go Wooshka. And it takes some serious stones to do that. And Mark Zara said that about it this morning too. He goes, Jesus, what did I think of it? I thought it was ballsy, was basically what Zara said. And it was. And jockeys get potted when things go horribly wrong all the time. And that could have gone wrong, but it didn't. It get right. So, yeah, we've been throwing flowers at the feet of Blake Shin, but deservedly so, because they cop a pasting when it goes wrong. So let's give credit where it's due. It was a stunner.
It's completely airborne too, Blake Shin. So he's 7 wins from his last 12 rides. He notched up 2,000 career wins on Saturday as well. So Antino won't go to the Cox Plate. They're going to go to the Champions Mole, then probably onto Hong Kong. Another thing that I thought that this race did is really Frank's the Fian form. So we know that Prodigy beat Mr. Brightside in the Fian. Antino ran third. Attrition ran fourth. And, of course, Attrition won the Hill Stakes. So it shows that was a pretty hot race.
It also threw up some question marks over another Will Rich. He went into the Doncaster as a hot favourite, failed. And he was disappointing again on the weekend, given every chance.
Yeah, he was. I think that he'll be okay. I think that he probably just got his heart broken on Saturday when he saw Antino just go past him so quickly. I think he's still a Group 1 horse. Many people might disagree. I'd be interested to know where they go with him for the rest of this spring. I don't really know where that is. You haven't heard anything, have you, Rog?
No, not as yet.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. You're speaking of Attrition, as we mentioned there. He won the Hill Stakes, like you said. He won the Toorak last year, beating Antino. So this weekend is the banner weekend for that horse, 2 years in a row. But yeah. What about Orchestral? Solid, but obviously eyeing the Golden Eagle.
Yeah, so Orchestral had a pretty hard run, really hit the line strongly. Before the race, it was a big push for her. A lot of people like her as a horse. A lot of people are really keen to stay with her. Now I think maybe $10 or $11 in the Empire Rose. So she was a big talking point. Of course, Alsafina was very good and Craig was really good as well. They're the ones to follow out of the race.
Let's look at the Scalacci as we move further along in our straight six. Bellatrix Star was getting weight off them being a three-year-old filly against the older horses, and she used it perfectly to her advantage. I had her as my best bet of the day, and I was very happy with the price. Inform fillies and mares. Mwah.
Yep. They just keep putting up a price, don't they, those bookies? And, yeah, she is the most, I'm calling her the most informed horse in Australia. She won a listed
That's
race
a big
followed
call.
By followed by a Group 3. Will you tell me who's more informed? Followed by a Group 2, and now she'll get her chance at a Group 1 in the Coolmore Stud Stakes on Derby Day. I'd love to see her win. She, of course, gets a 2-kilo differential off the boys. So I was listening to Ben Gleeson from Team Tiakau. They know that Coolmore Stud Stakes are very hard to win. I think that, you know, they probably think that she's a $10 or $11 chance, but she deserves her chance and away she goes.
Breeders don't like it. Breeders don't like it when the fillies win the Coolmore.
Yeah, this is true.
They do not like it. Hey, Jimmy Starr in the Weekend Hustler, the other horse to defy the track pattern. He looks to be back to near his best. This is a horse who set things a lot in the early part of this year. At one point, clear favourite for the All-Star Mile. He never actually got there because he just fell out of form. But his last couple of starts, outstanding, and he'll go on to a Group 1 now.
Yeah, and he reminds me a bit of another Will in the sense that, you know, he's had a rocky road to that magnificent win on Saturday, and I was
rocky road.
Well, he's up and down.
It just made me hungry, Rich. That's all I was saying.
Oh, right. But yeah, look, he's in form at the moment. Another Will can easily get back to that form as well. But you're right, he will go into the Rupert Clark. He deserves his chance at that. It was a very impressive win. We haven't talked much about all the talk about the track bias on Saturday, Rog. It seems a lot of people have come out and sort of dismissed the track bias talk. I personally think it was overplayed. Dan O's come out and said that it was well overplayed. A lot of trainers have said, Danny O'Brien in particular, said that Crawford always does show a bit of a leader bias, and everyone knows that.
Well, when it's a good track, it does. And yeah, I think there's been some, I was certainly of that thought early, but there has been some very valid points made, and we did see horses come from back and win, Jimmy Star, Bellatrix Star, all the stars. And Antino. So who's a star? It's certainly, and Dan was fantastic on the radio this morning in the way he really is a voice of reason. So yeah, I like many others who perhaps would have listened to that, have settled down a bit. Also, I think people are too
desperate to look for it. Even in the den with the boys, I was like, oh, what's happened with the track here? This pattern, that pattern. I just think it's a bit overplayed, but anyway, everyone's got their opinion. Should we look at the Rupert Clark market, Rog?
We might as well, because it's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube, and you've been looking at it probably for about a minute now. Hey, Jimmy Star, $3.20, $8 for Pericles and Alentia. Magic Time 10s, $11 here to shock. This is a horse that the Hayes boys are placing beautifully. That was where I did make some money on the weekend with Here to Shock. Pinstriped also $11 as a Group 1 winner earlier this spring. So that is shaping up as a really nice race as well.
Yeah, and just finishing off Jimmy Star, I think that he's a great chance in this race, but he to me looks like a great All-Star Mile chance. You were mentioning that he was favourite last year. I think that, you know, I'm sure the Mars stable would love him to win this, and then I guess he just gets a light freshen up and maybe they bring him back for the awe and the futurity, that pathway into the All-Star Mile.
And the Group 1 All-Star Mile now.
Exactly, that'll help it. So, yeah, exciting times for Jimmy's star.
If you're watching this at some point Monday afternoon or even Tuesday morning, like there's going to be a decision. We don't know it at the moment. It hasn't been released as we record this on who's going to take the Coolmore slot in the Everest. Of course, the Everest is this weekend, so they want to make a decision pretty quickly. It is going to be either Switzerland or Stormboy. Switzerland was super, winning the Roman Consul on the weekend. What way would you go, Rich?
I'd probably go with Switzerland. I just think, I don't know, it's only about Stormboy. I just think... he's just doesn't have that sort of that brilliance that I think you need to win an Everest. In saying that, it, you know, Switzerland should probably be about 20-1 in the Everest if they do a run him. I'd lean that way. It's a pretty hot Everest. Listening to Chris Waller on the radio this morning, he said that he's going to leave the decision up to the ratings guru, the gurus, the people who are able to pull apart the sectionals and have a look. I don't know who does that for him, but I'm sure it's someone who's very capable. I guess Coolmore would probably have that. So, yeah, Chris Waller doesn't really mind what way they decide to go. Obviously, Gay trains Stormboy. So, yeah, it's interesting. You've got probably the two most famous trainers in the country, both, you know, pestering Tom Magnier as to why their horse should run. And, yeah, we'll wait and see. I think we've got a tweet. I think we asked the public what they thought. There it is, Rog. That was one of my other tweets from yesterday.
Yeah, so the Wolf Den punters siding with Switzerland, which... is funny because Switzerland don't side with anyone, famously. 55.4% going with Switzerland as opposed to Stormboy. So, yeah, look, this whole conversation could be completely redundant for most listeners when they listen to this and they know exactly where we're going. But interestingly, Switzerland, super at the weekend. Can he win an Everest? Well, we'll find out. It's going to be a very open Everest this weekend. Let's go to Dan's O's ratings because the Dan O'Sullivan ratings are fascinating each Monday, but I think coming off this weekend, even more so. And no great surprise who's at the top of the tree. And I think, Rich, that is a new peak this spring for any horse.
Look at that. Super exciting. 107.2. So Antino's 107.2 is more than his previous best of 102.2. It's a 2.8 length new peak. When I look at the history of horses rated 100 plus, improving to this extent to even high elite peaks, we've only seen it about one in every 500 runs. Wow. So it really was the ride of the century and the run of the century.
Ride of the century. Geez, Declan Bakes has held it for 6 months. He's already lost it. What are we doing here? Did I know it's 100?
Just on that, like the Declan Bates ride on Pride of Jenny, it was luck. Like he said that she just bolted on him and he just had to hold on for dear life, whereas this was very calculated by Blake Shinn. So I have Blake Shinn's ride well ahead of... Declan Bates ride on Pride of Jenny. Anyway, back to Dano's ratings.
Denied Ollage, 102. On a previous best of 99.8, so a 10.8 length win in a $150,000 race at Geelong. That was the 99.8. If she ran this rating with 50.5 kilos over the 20,000, that'd be a long race, 2,400 metres in the Caulfield Cup, she will be somewhere in the finish. And, yeah, not surprising. I think she's a big chance if she can repeat that performance. It'd be tough on the quick backup.
Yeah, that's great. That increases my confidence. Moving on to Attrition. 101.5 is up on his previous best of 99.3 when he won the Group 1 Toorak Handicap last year.
Switzerland's 100.8 is up on his 99.7 when he won the Todman as a two-year-old in the autumn.
This is the interesting one. Private Life, 99.5, and the Group 1 Caulfield Guineas is 1.3 lengths below the median 101.8 since 2016. So Dano's basically saying it wasn't an amazing Caulfield Guineas and probably makes sense when you go and look at it in a horse that's only had four or five starts and was winning a benchmark 64 6 weeks ago, has won it.
All right, time now for my time to shine. It's Stewards in 60.
Stewards Room Speed Round.
And the Might and Power Vowns Declare rider Billy Egan reported that the gelding raced flat. Now, a post-race vet examination revealed no significant findings. Stable rep Jack Howard expressed disappointment in the performance, advised that Vowns Declare will now undergo a thorough vet examination on return to the stables. Blood tests, etc. Stewards will follow up. In the Scalacci Star Patrol, underwent a vet examination upon arrival because he hadn't raced since November 2023 due to a puncture wound in the hoof and also waiting for dry tracks. He was past suitable to race, but slow to begin, race wide without cover. Ben Mallum could offer no explanation for the performance. A post-race vet exam revealed no significant findings. So Stewards will follow up there with Star Patrol, looked a star last year. And in the Herbert Power, post-impressionist, race flat, Sam Friedman said he'd like you to just come to the end of his preparation.
Cook the book.
The most popular segment here on .com and the Den Mondays is Cook the Book. Joining me as always from Ladbrokes, Tom Hackett, from the Den, Kingsley Bartholomew. Tom, broadsiding, bright side, another wheel, all defeated. Have we upgraded the location of the Ladbrokes Christmas party?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Rog. Cook of Guineas Day is often one where we go in a little bit worried because sometimes it does go where those favourites go bang, bang, bang. But yeah, on Saturday where you get a situation where you got not one but two odds on favourites beaten in a group one and then another well-backed favourite beaten in the last as well. It is obviously a good result for the Ladbrokes book. So Caulfield in particular was a very, very strong result for the book, but still plenty of time left in the spring carnival.
I've just got this mental image of, do you remember DuckTales from when you were a kid, of Scrooge McDuck, how he just dives into the dollar coins? I just feel like that would have been the Ladbrokes trading floor on Saturday afternoon. How big were the swings for Ladbrokes on the Might and Power and the Caulfield Guineas results?
Yeah, Might and Power, the most interesting, where Deny Knowledge was actually our best result in the race. Very rarely do we get that. The best result in the race was Deny Knowledge. She was a $614,000 winner for the book. Mr. Brightside was going to be about a $450,000 loser. So the swing is basically, it's $1 million swing if Mr. Brightside does get past her late there in the Modern Power. And then in the Caulfield Guineas private life, a $684,000 winner for the book. And probably with the other factor with broadsiding is that he was included in a lot of those spring multis we know punters like to have. Broadside and the Caulfield Guineas was a very, very popular leg in a lot of the spring multis as well. So they all got knocked over. So no, it was a very, very big hour there for the trading room floor. Across two races, we won $1.2 million, which isn't bad going.
Oh, it makes you sick, doesn't it, Kings? Did you see a significant red flag with broadsiding and or brightside given the track pattern early on?
I am more so broadsiding than Mr. Brightside. So Deny Knowledge, it's interesting. Both those favourites were $1.50 out to $1.80, yet the punters are still, with Ladbrokes, are diving into them through multis and whatnot. So as we've spoken about before, betting fluctuations don't often tell the tale of what bookies are standing things for. But getting back to your question, yeah, broadsiding was always sort of going to be sort of back in the field, whereas Mr. Brightside was going to sit behind Deny Knowledge. So even though Deny Knowledge was going to lead there, it's Ladbrokes' best way. So, yeah, I mean, we saw again in the Caulfield Guineas the old Waller second up syndrome with broadsiding and also Private Life, which came out and failed second up and then won third up. So we spoke about that last week as well.
How much does that noticeable early track pattern affect your punting on the day? I know you've mentioned there's various ways to play it, whether you do take the early mark or do you wait till toward the jump. Did it save you money in any respect on Saturday?
No, it didn't save me money on Saturday. But the way I handle it is that it affects when I bet. So another wheel, for example, which I actually had leading on my map. I didn't think it would lead, but from barrier one, which the inside in the straight in particular was the place to be. I thought another wheel mapped very well. I thought another wheel would sit fourth fence. So I was more inclined to back it early. A horse like Jimmy Starr actually stayed out of. I could have easily saved if the track pattern was in its favour and I stayed out of Jimmy Starr. So actually cost me a bit of money. But the way I handle it, it affects two things for me. It affects when I bet and it affects the amounts. So I'll sort of, if the track pattern's against, I'll still bet, but I'll wait and sort of lower my limits on that horse.
Hey, Tom, just on Antino, was he friendless in the betting given that how a majority of the races had panned out earlier in the day?
He definitely wasn't friendless, Rog, but I think it definitely did impact how much punters did have on him late. So he ended up being a $207,000 winner for the Ladbrokes book. I think on a day where the track is playing a little bit differently, I think he would have been more strongly supported. So I think it definitely did impact the way punters played that race. By the time we got to race 10, I think everyone was talking about that pattern.
Tom, I noticed you were really taking a big stand against another wheel in that race. From in the morning, you were out to $3.20 and then $3 when everyone was $2.80. I think I ended up taking $3 or $2.90 off you guys when everyone else was $2.70. Why such a big opinion against another wheel?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily a big opinion against another wheel, but there was a number of other horses in the market that our trading team were quite keen on. So Craig, in particular, our traders had it marked substantially shorter than the market Ossipenko is another one that we had a higher opinion of than the market in general. So wasn't necessarily a knock on another wheel, but just the way that it was very short in what is still effectively a 1,600-meter handicap. So now the boys were keen to take it on and got rewarded in the end there. We ended up standing it for over $650,000. So it was a risk and one that paid off in the end.
On a personal point of view, Tom, with Antino, we do another podcast together, Moody on the Mic. We've both been big Antino fans over the journey. We've jumped off in recent times. Did it make you as sick as it made me?
Yeah, I was, and I was at Eagle Farm on Saturday as well, Rod. So at Queensland, well, we don't get that many Queensland train winners in these Group Ones in Melbourne or Sydney, and I found myself shaking my head in a little bit of disgust as well. But no, it was a terrific ride by from Blake Shin, but a great training performance from Tony Golan, and the horse was flying as well. Like the way, obviously, Blake Shin's ride deserves a lot of credit, but you've got to have the horse under you to be able to do that, and the horse was just spectacular. So no, I was feeling a little bit flat myself, Rog, but no, it's a terrific effort and good for Queensland Racing as well.
Of course. Well, back to the business side of things. Where did punters get Ladbrokes? We heard all about Ladbrokes getting a hold of the punters with broadside and also broadsiding and brightsiding. What were the overall results, Caulfield and Rose Hill?
Man, Caulfield was pretty tough for the punters pretty much across the board. There was three winning results. Extreme Virtue was well back in the first. Punters finished on top there. Jimmy Starr was our worst result at Caulfield, was a $313,000 loser. And Bellatrix Starr was well backed with us as well, was a $275,000 loser. But in Sydney, punters actually finished well on top. In the 10 races, six went the way of the punters, and they were up and about early. Alabama State was a $225,000 loser for the book and then finished very strongly. So Heater Shock was a small loss for the book. Alentia, a $403,000 loser for the book. That was our worst result anywhere on the day on Saturday. And then Ferrari in the last was a losing result as well for the book. So punters, they obviously struggled at Caulfield, but finished well on top in Sydney. So far this spring, basically it has been the way where at least one of the meetings have gone the punters' way.
It's been a bit tough for you of late, Kings. How did you finish on the weekend? Bearing in mind, we're only really just, you know, halfway through the spring here. There's plenty of races still to be run.
It's normally the other way around where punters are a bit on top early, and then that Flemington week, the bookies get back on top. So it might be a reversal this year, hopefully. Now, I was a small loser on Saturday. Really came down to that last race with another wheel, but I had a good result on attrition in the Hill Stakes at about 33-1. And also Wanda Rocks, which is really heavily backed up north. I had a good result on it. So those were my two best results, but small loser and we battle on.
You never loses in our eyes, gentlemen. We thank you very much for your time. As always, we'll catch you next Monday on .com and The Den.
Sneak peek.
Let's take a look at next week, which is this week, which is one of the great days in racing. I love having Caulfield Cup Day, Everest Day on the same day. It's fascinating, but it's not all about those two big feature races, Rich, because we've got the Millennium Sprint at Caulfield. Now, if anyone wondering, hang on, the Millennium, is it Randwick? It's a $2 million 2-year-old race. No, apparently not. Apparently they've called the Caulfield Sprint the Millennium Sprint. We've got to go and round a group two at Caulfield this weekend.
It is a bit confusing. Estrella in the race that excites me. Estrella back to group two grade. She should be right in the thick of that race. Hayasugi as well.
Hayasugi.
Is it Hayasugi officially, is it?
Okay. Hayasugi, and just on Japanese stuff, Katsu. That's Dr. Turf's horse, Katsu. Good luck to me, old mate, Dr. Turf. Hey, I thought this was that $2 million race, and I was like, Turfy doesn't need the money. So Katsu in there as well. Hopefully it's not a cat. What else have we got next later up this week?
Yeah, the other race of note, the other group two is the Tristark for the mares. So all these mares will be on their way to the Empire Rose, hopefully. Skybird will be interesting. Skybird has been in great form. Quintessa as well. There's a lot of other great races on the Caulfield card, a lot of group threes. I think Reserve Bank will be going around in the Gothic Stakes as well. Reserve Bank's the 3-year-old who nearly won the Dane Hill. And, of course, a huge card of racing up at Randwick. The couple other interesting races will be the Silver Eagle, the lead up to the Golden Eagle, the Sydney Stakes, which is the consolation to the Everest. Annabelle Neesham and Rob Archibald, they've got a big hand in the races all across Australia, really, on Saturday. And I'll be doing a fantastic The Annabelle set with this week with them. And we had Rob in the hot seat last week, and he tipped four horses, 40-1, 20-1, 10-1, and 10-1. He said they're all great each way bets. They all ran the place, Rog. Can you believe that?
Gee, that's very good. I thought you were going to say they were one. I was like, geez, where's the multi? That would
have been good.
That would have kept the money away from Ladbrokes if we'd we'd had
yeah.
that.
Well, I think even the place multi was 300-400-1, something crazy like that. So.
Oh, they more fool me for not tuning in. I might have to tune in this week.
Must watch television.
If Rob Archibald's tipping in that sort of form, why you got Annabelle on this week? Give her the flip.
I know. Well, she did well the week before. She had a really strong push for Ostraka, which won at about $4 or $5. And Ostraka will be in the Silver Eagle this week. But I heard that Southport Tycoon might be going in the Silver Eagle as well, which is a bit scary. So, yeah, just the most elite racing on Saturday, Roger. And we'll be live streaming. We did a live stream on Saturday. Went really well. We really enjoy it. A lot of good banter. Everyone can get involved because of the comments on YouTube. So make sure you tune in again for our live stream for Caulfield Cup Everest Day this week in partnership with racing.com.
Yeah, I've said it plenty of times on here when you've mentioned the live streams. If you are just sitting at home by yourself and you want to watch the races, you might as well just feel like you're at the pub with your mates and whack the Wolf Den live stream on. Rich, I can't wait for this weekend. And we will review, take out all the, we'll give you all the big takeaways right here on .com and the Den Mondays next Monday.
Over and out, team. Thank you very much. See you on Saturday. Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.